No, it made no sense to not.
Welcome, everyone. I will call the Senate Committee on Rules to order today. We'll start out with a public hearing by opening up a public hearing on Senate Bill 888. Sheree.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Bill 888 requires a major political party candidate for President or Vice President of the United States to provide the Secretary of State with the candidate's most recent federal income tax information, or provide the Oregon Government Ethics Commission with a statement of economic interest in order to appear on the primary election ballot, general election ballot, or voter's pamphlet. Additionally, the bill requires that a candidate provide written consent for the public disclosure of federal income tax information as submitted and provides guidelines for the redaction of specified personal information. There are no amendments being offered for this bill at this time, and revenue paperwork indicates no impact, and fiscal paperwork indicates a minimal impact.
Okay, we will start out with my honorable colleague from Tigard, Representative Doherty.
Thank you very much. For the record, I'm Margaret Doherty. I'm the state rep for House District 35, which is Tigard in Southwest Portland, and I'm very honored to be here to speak with you. So, Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the highest office in the United States, integrity is so very important. For decades, Americans have had access to the tax returns of those individuals who have run for and been elected to become President of the United States. This tradition has been voluntary, and it speaks to the importance of transparency that is expected from those who serve as President and Vice President. Unfortunately, this tradition of transparency was abandoned in our most recent election, and instead, a dangerous tradition of secrecy stands to replace it if we do not take action. This is why I'm honored to co-sponsor Senate Bill 888, along with Senator Burdick and Representative Williamson, to make sure that voters here in Oregon and across the country continue to expect this level of transparency. For those of you that know me, they might be surprised to hear me quote President Richard Nixon, but his remarks on presidential tax returns are appropriate for the times. Over 40 years ago, while under audit, President Nixon, who started the tradition of releasing his tax returns, told the people that people have got to know whether their president is a crook, whether or not their president is a crook. Today, that standard remains, and accordingly, a president's tax return should uniformly be made public so that voters can understand the financial dealings of the individuals who aspire to serve in the highest office of the land. Nearly 75% of Americans, when asked, said they believe tax returns should be released by presidential candidates. These Americans are Democrats and Republicans alike. This is not a partisan issue. It is a baseline of transparency that Americans overwhelmingly expect, and Senate Bill 888 will deliver that transparency. Senate Bill 888 establishes a modest requirement for ballot access in Oregon, one that has been met for decades by president and vice presidential candidates from a variety of political parties. This legislation should be seen merely as codifying the tradition of transparency that Oregonians and Americans have come to expect. I urge your support, and I'm happy to answer any questions you may have.
Thank you. Questions from the committee? Obviously, the current events in our nation's capital kind of gave us the impetus to this, and it's my understanding that if a candidate was not able, chose not to release their taxes or fill out an ethics form, that they could still get on the ballot by the other methods like petitioning.
Yes, that's my understanding. Okay. Yes.
All right. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Okay, our next witnesses are Norman Terrell, Mike Fish, and Steve Croson.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, for the record, my name is Norman Turrell. I'm the president of the League of Women Voters of Oregon. And yes, men are invited to become members of the League. Although this is not exactly a campaign finance issue, I'm also the campaign finance portfolio holder for the League, and I'm a member of the task force on campaign finance reform that has proposed some bills for this session. I'm also a retired computer software engineer. The League of Women Voters believes that the voters should have sufficient information about candidates to make informed choices. I want to emphasize that this is not a partisan issue for the League. The League has advocated it on this issue for financial disclosure since at least the 1970s. And we never take partisan stances on anything. Access to information regarding candidates' financial interests is particularly important in order to ensure the absence of corruption and undue influence. We strongly support SB 888, which requires disclosure of economic information for presidential and vice presidential candidates in the form of an income tax return or a statement of economic interest as required for all candidates in Oregon. Because SEIs are already required of other candidates in Oregon, then why not require tax returns or SEIs for presidential and vice presidential candidates, too? We agree with the sponsors of the bill that income tax returns provide the fullest picture of a candidate's financial ties and interests. According to the Sunlight Foundation, tax returns provide a wide range of information from which voters can learn much about a candidate's priorities and values, including yearly income, tax rate, amount paid, deductions, tax credits, real estate taxes, abatements, investments, charitable contributions, outstanding debts, financial positions of business ties, and indications of offshore accounts. Before 2016 election, every presidential candidate for the last 40 years has voluntarily provided tax returns. And we believe that there is no reason to suddenly hide this important information from Oregon voters. To be elected to the highest office in the land requires full transparency. The League is especially appreciative of the position for the provisions of SB 888 for easy access to the information on the Secretary of State's website. We believe this legislation is one more reason to be proud of Oregon's commitment to election reform and accessibility of public records. Thank you for the opportunity to discuss this legislation.
Thank you, and we'll continue with the panel.
Good afternoon, Chair Burdick and members of the committee. My name is Mike Fish. I'm from Portland, and I'm a public school teacher in Lake Oswego. I strongly support Senate Bill 888. Oregonians expect transparency from their political candidates and public administrators. As this committee is well aware, a broad array of officials must submit documents revealing their economic ties and sources of income to the Oregon Government Ethics Commission. 2 years ago, the importance of detailed financial disclosures became obvious to Oregonians during the ethics controversy connected to former Governor Kitzhaber. In the aftermath of the investigation and his resignation, both Republicans and Democrats pushed for broader and stricter laws to reveal elected officials' economic interests. In Oregon, transparency and accountability have been bipartisan issues. Oregonians are accustomed to being able to verify that any government administrator is acting on behalf of the state's best interest and not on behalf of his or her personal interest. Oregonians also expect presidential candidates to disclose their tax returns. Indeed, for nearly 40 years, almost every presidential candidate has voluntarily published this information. Senate Bill 888 simply codifies this common practice. This information is essential to maintaining public trust in our nation's most important public institutions. During the 2016 campaign, President Trump repeatedly stated that he would eventually publish his tax returns. While some Oregonians voted for President Trump and some did not, all Oregon voters deserve to have the president keep his word and release these documents. Voting for or against President Trump in the most recent election was not a referendum on whether or not presidents should release their tax returns. Because of his campaign promises, Republican and Democratic voters still want and expect this critical information to be made public. The failure of President Trump to release his taxes has cast a cloud over his administration. Requiring future candidates to divulge such information will either bring to voters' attention potential conflicts of interest or put to rest any questions of such conflicts. Though all presidential candidates must complete an executive branch personnel public financial disclosure report, this information is not specific enough to alleviate the public's concerns about potential conflicts of interest. Only candidates' tax returns give valuable details on their effective tax rates, reveal the types of taxes they pay, show how much they give to charity, and most critically, offer a detailed picture of their income-producing assets. Oregonians care about financial transparency. Please support and pass Senate Bill 888. Ensure that in the future, Oregonians will have as much information about presidential candidates as they used to. Thank you for the opportunity to testify today.
And thank you.
Madam Chair and members of the committee, my name is Steve Poison. I'm a registered voter from Staten in Marion County. The last election and the continued refusal of President Trump to release his tax returns, especially given the fact that he has the potential for so many conflicts of interest, underscores the need for the public to have this information prior to the election. All presidents in modern history have provided this information prior to President Trump, even though they did so without it being a legal requirement. President Trump's refusal now makes this an issue that must be addressed by law. I am encouraged that Oregon is potentially considering being a leader in this requirement and hopefully excluding candidates from primaries and elections will provide enough motivation for them to comply, especially if coupled with the National Popular Vote Bill, which would make Oregon's electors even more important. This bill could have a significant impact on the compliance with this precedent. And perhaps other states will follow Oregon's lead in essentially making this a national requirement. I encourage you to vote to recommend that Senate Bill 888 is brought to the Senate floor for a full vote and with a recommendation for passage. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the panel? Thank you very much. Our next witnesses will be Joyce Judy, Gareth. Gareth Rosenector. Okay, it's Gareth?
Yeah, Gareth.
Okay, Gareth, come on, wherever you are. And then you can tell us what your last name sounds like. And Michael Savaggio.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and committee persons. My name is Joyce Judy. I'm a Salem resident and a registered voter in District 11. The president based part of his candidacy on his success as a businessman and a self-made billionaire. Many experts, however, have called into question his claims of success. They claim he has significantly overstated his wealth and that, in fact, the president has made less than if he had simply invested in his father's loans into the S&P 500. Furthermore, many of the president's properties are overseas or have convoluted ownership structures. This prevents the public from understanding the extent to which he may have conflicts of interest with people and foreign governments that have business before the United States. Finally, the president has acknowledged he has debt, but the public does not know the extent of his indebtedness or who holds the debt. This again prevents the public from understanding who can put financial pressure on the president to make decisions that benefit his debt holders to the disadvantage of the American people. For these reasons, I believe that all presidential candidates and vice presidential candidates should make their tax returns available to the public in order to be on the ballot here in Oregon. And I ask the committee to please bring this forward for a vote with a recommendation of yes on this SB 888. Thank you.
Thank you.
My name is Garrett Rosenthal.
You need to step back from the mic. It's very sensitive. Even
okay.
Farther. Even
farther?
There you go.
All right. My name is Garrett Rosenthal. I'm a resident of the Tualatin area, House District 37. For the record, I'm also a member with Tax Fairness Oregon and I'm a platform chair for the Washington County Democrats. However, I'm not speaking on their behalf. I am speaking on behalf of myself and a friend, Will Hobbs, who has drafted a resolution on this. It occurs to me that this is not a partisan issue. At least honesty and transparency are not partisan issues. And in this era when we seem to be customarily electing multimillionaires and billionaires in a global economy to be presidents of the United States, we need as much transparency as is reasonably practical. So we support this measure. And we hope that we will pass a resolution. I hope a resolution will be passed on the part of Washington County to support this. But I urge you all to support this, and I will submit some testimony in writing later.
Thank you. Mr. Salvaggio.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Michael Salvaggio. I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Working Families Party in strong support of this measure. In Oregon, we hold our candidates and elected officials to very strong principles of transparency. We feel that this is an important accountability tool, not just so that a state agency or some private reviewer or auditor can see that information, but so that the public at large has a chance to look at that and review that. And we do that for a very simple reason. That is because democracy works best when voters are able to have well-informed decisions. And building on what Representative said earlier, as Richard Nixon said, people have got to know whether or not their president is a crook. Not just Richard Nixon, but their president generally. And the best intervention point is at the point before that person is president, when they are still a candidate. Because sunlight is, in fact, the best disinfectant to these things. In an era where finances have become more complex and more global, it's more important than ever that we have this kind of information broadly disseminated. As far back as 1967, George Romney, running for president, who had, despite his openness as governor of Michigan, was famously shy about releasing his tax returns, eventually did come around to that and released not only the prior year, but 12 years of tax returns, saying that the public deserved to see those because, and he quoted, one year could be a fluke, perhaps done for show. So this is a very bipartisan issue historically about getting information to voters, information that helps bring a fuller picture of a candidate's financial positions, interests, and activity to light. It's the same reason that banks use tax returns as opposed to top-line information to evaluate a mortgage, for example. It paints a fuller picture of not only income and tax rate, but the deductions that are used, investments that are made, charitable contributions, to whom the individual owes money, certain foreign business dealings, and if there's money offshore. So we ask that this committee codify what nearly every presidential candidate for decades has done and pass Senate Bill 888, and I thank you for your time.
Thank you very much. Questions from the panel?
Could I add one more thing? I also brought some letters of support for the bill.
Oh, please, just give them to our committee administrator, and we will put those
thank
in
you.
The record.
I have a couple of questions for the panel, Madam Chair.
Please, Senator Ferriero.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I have a couple of issues or just a couple of questions to ask. One of them has to do with disclosure in Oregon. I'm not aware of any public official that is required to post their income tax records in Oregon. Is that consistent with your understanding? So governor, candidate, secretary of state, treasurer.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, my understanding is also that no current elected official in Oregon is required to post their income tax return specifically. My understanding is that that would remain the case if the bill passed. They would have the option of filing a outline of financial information, I believe it's with the Ethics Commission, or in the case that they simply want to submit their tax return in lieu of that, they would be able to do that. If I am in error, I'm sure the committee staff can correct me.
Madam Chair, follow up.
Please follow up.
I think you're correct, Mr. Salvaggio. I don't think there's any requirement. I know that occasionally people have voluntarily done so, and sometimes in response to public inquiry. But I was in receipt of a legislative council opinion, which I'll make part of the record by reference, but also post it on OLIS, that says that Senate Bill 888, when we asked whether or not this was would be constitutionally valid, the response was, well, it's an open question. Probably likely to leading to some litigation. So I'll go ahead and put that in along with the reasoning in the public record, so it'll be posted on OLIS and folks can take a look at that. But I was wondering if the game is afoot, perhaps it would be easier for us to bring something down that's smaller and closer to home. If you really want to start with disclosure, maybe you should start with state elected officials and see how that wears with the Oregon Constitution before you start firing arrows at federal offices, which would get you potentially into federal court on a constitutional question. So have you thought about doing this in Oregon rather than doing this at aiming an Oregon statute at federal elective offices?
Let me take a shot at that, because the way the bill is drafted, it either an ethics form or the tax returns would fulfill the requirements. And right now, most of us, certainly you and I, are required to file an ethics form in order to be a candidate. So in that sense, it's already being done.
Well, Madam Chair, I don't mean to be argumentative, but you don't have to fill out an ethics form until you become a candidate or actually gotten elective office. I think there's a little something more emotional about an income tax filing. And as you recall, when we made all Oregonian elected officials subject to the disclosure filings, they resigned en masse, Madam Chair. We had to take a step back because people regarded that as too great an intrusion into their
private
lives.
I think that had more to do with the quarterly filings and the listing of family members and a few other provisions.
Yeah, in other words, we overshot what was a reasonable disclosure, which is the case I'm making here. Wouldn't it be more reasonable to try this in Oregon with the elected officials first?
It really is.
Why not do both? Because this is a referral and it has to have one topic.
Okay. Thank you. Our last panel will be Candace Aston, Greg Burrell, and Janet Lee.
I'll make this.
Thank you. Appreciate it.
Yeah.
Is that the same one that Brian has?
It's possible.
I can see
that. Would you make this part of the record, please?
Welcome. Hi. My name is Candace Aston. I'm an attorney in Portland, Oregon, and I'm submitting my testimony on behalf of Indivisible Oregon District 3 in favor of Bill 888. And what we're really just asking for is to codify something that's been custom for 40 years. It's always been customary that the candidates provided their returns when they ran for president. And now it becomes necessary to make this a rule because of one person who defied the customary requirements. Tax returns provide the press and the public an opportunity to learn about any conflicts of interest before the election. The most recent election has shown us that we can no longer rely on custom to dictate the behavior of the candidates. It has also shown us that we need to be more diligent about discovering conflicts of interest before the election. We are asking for a tool to help us to do this. This bill is a no-brainer to us. This bill is for transparency by people running for the most powerful office in the country. We put a lot of trust and responsibility on our president, and transparency is key to earning that trust. Transparency is a growing concern among the entire electorate. Both parties are concerned with conflicts of interest and corruption. Pew Research has been doing polls since 1958 about whether Americans trust their government. In recent years, trust peaked at around 55% trusting their government in the year 2000 and has been steadily declining ever since. As of 2015, just 26% of Democrats and Democratic leaners say they can trust the federal government, nearly all or most of the time, compared with just 11% of Republicans and Republican leaners. So trust in the government is not a partisan issue, and we need to do what we can to restore that trust. Transparency is key. Oregonians would like to hear from their lawmakers that they care about trust and transparency. This bill is a step in that direction. Please give us this tool to confirm our trust in you and in any presidents that we elect in the future. Thank you.
Thank you.
Welcome.
Let me try this one here. For the record, my name is Greg Burrell. I reside in Portland in Multnomah County, and I am here testifying as an individual, although I am involved with organizations such as the Portland Association of Teachers and Oregon Education Association. I'm here, and Chair Burdick, Vice Chair Ferrioli, and members of the panel. I'm here to testify in support of this bill. And I guess I've been listening to the former testimony, and I've been going back and forth as to whether or not the original testimony I had written is appropriate to share. I'm stretching the connection a little bit between this bill and things that are happening in our country as a result of Richard Nixon's attempts to change the Republican Party. And I've decided that I'm going to say this. It's because the Republican strategy envisioned by Richard Nixon has been so successful that a near majority of American voters elected a master of implementing racist policies without appearing racist. I don't know how many of you have seen the documentary 13th and heard the damning evidence confessed by John Ehrlichman and Lee Atwater, whose complicity wasn't revealed until after his death. And those of you who have heard me testify before know that I almost never feel it necessary to address any elected body as an African American rather than simply as an American. And the idea of racism makes people uncomfortable, so many people avoid the subject, but I've decided that I just couldn't stay silent in the face of what I am now teaching my students as a substitute teacher. In 1969, one of Richard Nixon's first acts was to reach out to disaffected voters who voted for segregationist George Wallace in the 1968 elections. This is the moment that the Republican Party became the party that invited bigots into the party.
Mr. Burrell, I wonder if you could confine your comments to the bill.
Okay.
That would be terrific.
All right, I will. I appreciate that direction. The fact is that because we now have a deal maker, a businessman in the White House, it's very important for us all to understand the nature of his business dealings. We need to know whether or not any of his business ventures violate the emoluments clause of the Constitution. We need to know whether or not, as other people have mentioned, whether or not he is beholden to entities having business before the government, and whether or not foreign diplomats are spending money at his properties in order to curry favor with him, whether or not he agrees, whether or not he actually provides favor. And it's so important to me because I recently read a study where some political scientists compared voter sentiment on legislation and the nature of legislation that actually got passed, and they concluded that our country more resembled an oligarchy than a democracy. The interesting thing is the data points for that study came from 1981 to 2001. And so I feel it's of vital importance that we understand the business connections of our president. And this is why I think it's much more important that this bill relate to presidential and vice presidential candidates as opposed to Oregon state officials. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Questions from the panel? Thank you. Is Janet Lee in the room? Because she signed up to testify. Okay. That concludes our witness list. So we will close the public hearing on Senate Bill 888. And we will open a public hearing on SJR 32.
Madam Chair and members, Senate Joint Resolution 32 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution that would expand the three-fifths majority threshold to include legislative measures that meet any of the following criteria. They establish or increase taxes, modify or expand a tax base to produce revenue, establish or increase fees or fines, or lastly, contain offsetting reductions in revenue. There are no amendments offered for this bill. Revenue paperwork indicates that there is no impact, and fiscal paperwork indicates an indeterminate impact.
Senator Canope.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. I'm State Senator Tim Canope. I represent Senate District 27, which includes Bend, Redmond, Tumalo, and Sun River. And today I am before the committee advocating for SJR 32. Senate Joint Resolution 32 proposes an amendment to the Oregon Constitution to expand the types of legislative measures that require a three-fifths majority vote in each chamber for passage. So under SJR 32, the following types of legislation would require a three-fifths majority vote: bills that establish a new or increased tax, bills that modify or expand the tax base to produce revenue, bills that establish new or increased fees or fines, and bills that offset reductions in revenue. Revenue-raising bills currently require a three-fifths vote, and expanding this requirement to include the previously mentioned bills adds another layer of, I think, scrutiny and protection, I think, for Oregon taxpayers. And if we're going to have tax increases, I think it should be a high bar. I think in previous sessions, it was believed that some of these things did require a three-fifths vote. And through court decisions and other procedures, including legislative council opinion, apparently some of them do not. So I just brought this forward because I think it was important for us to take a look at, and I think the people of Oregon should decide that versus legislative council or people in this building where it may be unclear. So thus, HGR 32, and I'd be happy to answer any questions I might.
Thank you. Questions from the panel? Okay.
Thank you.
Good explanation. No questions. Sean Cleave.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Sean Cleave representing the Oregon Association of Realtors in support of SJR 32. Somewhat begrudgingly, perhaps, the concept is laid out by Senator Canope, which we thank him for introducing the measure for conversation today. We're not ready to concede completely that, based on the opinion of legislative counsel, court case, City of Seattle versus Oregon Department of Revenue, September 2015, necessarily opened the door in a way that needs to be closed by the concepts illustrated in the bill. However, as attorneys do, there are dueling opinions on that. It's something that we have strong concerns on this session. There have been a variety of pieces of legislation that would impact home ownership, one regarding deductibility of property taxes for people who means test out at earnings of $50,000 or more. And another one that does a fairly substantial haircut to our federal connection to the code for mortgage interest deduction. Both of those bills have been introduced in a way that illustrates that the Legislative Council believes they do not require a three-fifths majority. And with those concerns illustrated, I will close my testimony and answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Questions? And you're talking also about the Seattle City Light decision as well.
Specifically, yes, Madam Chair.
All right. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
This time I won't murder your name, Garrett Rosenthal.
Chair Burdick and Vice Chair Ferrioli, a pleasure to be here. I'm speaking on behalf of Tax Fairness Oregon. As you heard, SJR 32 would ask for a referendum that would extend the three-fifths 60% vote requirement to bills that establish new or increased taxes, including but not limited to increases in tax rates, the elimination or reduction in tax credits, exemptions, deductions, subtractions, or other expenditures. It's quite a grab bag. It would also apply to modifications of a tax base, new or increased fines or bills containing offsetting reductions in revenue. Tax Fairness Oregon strongly opposes this bill for a variety of reasons. To start off, first and foremost, this bill represents an extreme level of fiduciary irresponsibility. In essence, it would retain the capacity to create tax credits, exemptions, and exclusions by simple majority, but removal would still require or would require a supermajority. I'll give as an example the situation regarding the business energy. We would note the business energy tax credits, everybody knows as Betsy. While we may all agree that tax credits and other instruments can provide development benefits, we all know they can turn into boondoggles or things that are not effective. It would be irresponsible to make it harder to remove such or potential boondoggles than to establish them. Our opposition to the use of the supermajority regarding fees and fines is simply based upon the basic one-person, one-vote premise. The level of democratic representation to establish and remove fines should be equivalent. There shouldn't be a disparity there. Regarding the entire bill, Tax Fairness Oregon does not favor the use of supermajorities to do the will of the people in conducting state business, since it violates basic tenets of democracy. However, repeal of the current 60% requirement for revenue bills is not at issue here. The concepts embedded in SJR 32 would make Oregon government less efficient and less adaptive to changing conditions. While its provisions would protect, to some extent the desires of minority political interests, it would do so at the expense of the majority in a way that would reduce government efficiencies. It would, in essence, create a tyranny of the minority. Tax Fairness of Oregon opposes all aspects of SJR 32. Thank you. I'd be happy to respond to questions.
Questions from the panel. All right. Thank you very much. That's all we have signed up on this bill, so we will close the public hearing on SJR 32. And that completes our business committee, so we're adjourned. This committee, so we're adjourned. And that completes our business.